Brilliant from Kennedy. Couldn't resist the shot. That's gone in off the defender.
The chairman, you lose your little player. And it's in. It's a goal from Gilmour. Jimmy Gilmour has scored for Falkirk.
Finnegan's cross. Stephen Thompson. Falkirk have the lead after a quarter of an hour.
McKenzie slips. It goes straight to McGuffey. McGuffey shoots from his own half. And that is incredible.
He's taking them all on here. Catch him if you can. You can't. That is amazing. That is phenomenal. A touch of individual inspiration from Kevin McAllister.
This is Falkirk Daft.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Falkirk Daft as we meet a man who played for the Bairns between 2013 and 2016, making over 140 appearances in the Navy Blue, scoring 14 goals, and is widely regarded as one of the modern day greats. He's a Welsh international, currently plays for Sheffield Wednesday. He is Will Vokes, everyone. Hello, Will.
Hey, Will.
Thanks for having me on. Very, very kind introduction.
Yeah, I've got to give you the big up, Will. But generally, I mean, when we talk about Falkirk greats, for the young team who maybe didn't see the McAllisters, didn't see the Stainrods, didn't see the Cadets, you are held up there as one of the greatest players to play in the Navy Blue and absolutely deserve every recognition you get on every T-shirt you've been printed on. And you know, they would still sing your name at the Falkirk Stadium, my friend.
That's quite overwhelming to hear, to be fair, because obviously I've been away for so long. I think I look back at my time in Falkirk with so much fondness, some of the best years of my career. I just, such a shame that we never won anything because we were so close. And obviously, you know, I knew from being at the club, the players in the past that we spoke about from, you know, winning Scottish Cup all the years ago and promotions and stuff, that we were so close in those 3 years to promotion and the Scottish Cup, obviously final. That's still the worst day of my career. I think nothing will ever beat that, but the best day at the same time. So, I love my time at Falkirk. I think everybody knows that. I'm still fond of the club and I know we're unbeaten at the moment, which is fantastic. So.
Well, so obviously, we all know, as you mentioned, so you mentioned the cup final there, we know about the journey, which we'll go into on the podcast today as well. But talk to us about before you came to Falkirk, sorry. How did your career start, basically, and how did you get to Falkirk?
Yeah, so it's a long story, but I'll make it as short as I can. So came through at Tranmere from the age of 8 or 9 till 18, got a professional contract after the youth team. That's how it works in England. And then a very old school manager came in, Ronnie Moore, who I've spoke about previously, and he basically disregarded the youth team, in my opinion. I've seen Ronnie since, but in my opinion, that's what he did. Essentially, from it all going great, it was hit the fan, as to put the phrase, for me. I went on loan in non-league to Workington Town, and I think in the press, obviously, over the years, it's come that I was scouted at Workington from Falkirk, but that's not how it happened. I was playing for the Resies at Tranmere. So I was playing in the youth team and then for the Resies. And then when I was a pro, I was playing in the Resies, which no longer exists, but the old school reserve team, and for Workington. So I had a game every week. And Enoch Shawumney was at Tranmere at the time. I don't know if you obviously
played.
Played for Falkirk as well, yeah.
Yeah, so basically, Stephen Presley had come to watch somebody, not me, and I played left back, funnily enough, in the Resies for Tranmere. Can't remember who it was against, but must have played all right. He's very recognisable, isn't he, Elvis? So obviously, after that, I knew when he was in the stand, he came to watch a few times because he obviously recognised his long hair. It's a long old way down to Tranmere. Enoch had told me, I think Falkirk are watching you, interested in you. Being honest, I'd never really heard of, I'd heard of Falkirk, but I didn't know much about them.
Yeah,
quickly googled it. It said the players were on like £4,000 a week, £5,000 a week. I was thinking, and that's all you need to know about Google and wages, because we all know that's not true. So anyway, I played against Man City in the Resies at right back, and I think that was the one where they decided that they'd seen something in me. Again, try and keep it as brief as I can. I knew that was in the pipeline, so agreed release terms at Tranmere prior to, I was probably going to be released anyway in the January, but I agreed release terms like the end of November. Then the problem with Falkirk came, there's no money. Bearing in mind, by the way, I was on £100 a week at Tranmere. Jeez. So when I say there's no money, I mean like no money.
There's no money.
Zero, zero. So I've been offered the contract in non-league at Workington, 260 quid a week. At the time, that was obviously a big pay rise, but part-time football, you know, I'd always wanted to be a footballer. It wasn't about the money at this point at all, but I'm just giving you know, an insight to how it happened. And then I remember where I was stored in my family home. My agent rang me. You know, I'd only just signed with. My mum and dad didn't think I needed an agent. I didn't think I needed an agent because my career, if I'm just being honest, not arrogant, was taking its path. You know, as far as I was concerned and the youth team were concerned, I was going to be in Tranmere's first team within the space of 6 months. Mm. You know, things were said like, oh, you'll be captain of Tranmere in the future by previous managers, blah, blah, blah. That all obviously had ended quite quickly. And then my agent said, yeah, what do you think about going up and not getting paid? And
how many swear words did you say?
Well, yeah, but like you say, I was on £100 a week, but I was thinking, like, how is that possible? Like, you know, I was like, oh. And then within the space of 2 minutes, he didn't really convince me. I was like, do you know what? Yeah, I want to be in full-time football. I need a chance. They can pay for my accommodation. And then luckily enough, pardon me, my mum and dad gave me enough money to survive in that time. 80 quid a week they give me. So they give me a pay cut. And then, like, yeah, I don't know if you have much detail you want me to go into what happened after that. But obviously then I went up, wasn't being paid. It was quite common knowledge I wasn't being paid.
Yeah,
I was very low in the pecking order in the dressing room. I think I was seen as, like, just this lad who's come in to do someone a favour. Really tough 3 months after that when I went up. Really hardest 3 months of my life, I'd say. Living on my own, no money, not fitting in with the squad, not playing when I thought I was going to go up there and play.
Mm.
Even Presley leaves, Gary Holt comes in, all that stuff. But yeah, that's how I ended up at Falkirk as quickly as I can tell you.
So you were originally brought in then as a fullback, presumably then. Well, who was it? Was it Gary or was it Peter that moved you into that midfield or saw within you that midfield player?
Well, it wasn't. Obviously, you wouldn't remember the ins and outs, but I didn't do that. So I played centre-half at Tranmere. I was always a midfielder, but I couldn't go in. Like I say, I could speak for hours. But anyway, youth team at Tranmere, to play, I had to play centre-half because there was a hierarchy in England at that time. It's ended now, which is great. But if you're a second-year scholar, you play. If you're a first-year scholar, you only play if the second years were seen as they have to be given an opportunity to win a professional contract.
Right.
The youth team manager wanted me to play, but they had four midfielders, so I couldn't play midfield. So right. I played centre-half. Then ended up at right-back just for the resis. I wasn't a right-back. I just played there because, again, they needed a player. Stephen Plessy did think I was a right-back, but probably after a little short time, he'd have realised I wasn't. It was just because that's where I was playing. So, like I say, you probably wouldn't remember, but I made my debut at Morton. And that was at centre-half. And I played centre-half then the first year at Falkirk under Gary Holt. So Alex Smith, was it Alex Smith giving my debut Morton when Presley got the job to Fleetwood, I think. And then Coventry, maybe. And then I played centre-half until Hoosty came in. And it was him that changed it.
I remember your debut. Well, because obviously Capel was not the nicest of places to go, neither is Greenock for that matter. But in terms of, I remember your debut, because at that time, did you not have a proper mop of hair on as well?
I might have done because I was growing a player I played with was going through chemo, so we did a grow for Joe thing, so we all grew our hair.
Yeah.
But yeah, like my debut at Morton, I remember it obviously really well, and I played really well, but I was at fault for the goal. So I was... faultless is far too strong of a word, but I was pretty... And then the goal, the 1-0, pretty sure it was 1-0. I tried to, like, let it through to the goalie and I got nicked in front. And but Alex was brilliant with that because he was such a senior figure. He could see the journey I was on, the way I'd played in the game. Don't get me wrong, he still said, like, you know, the goal, but you'll learn from it. And then it was, like, accelerated learning for such an amazing time at Falkirk and getting all those games, the big games we played in. Yeah, and I look back at that, and then I think I got man of the match at Raith Rovers away under Gary Holt, and that was when I probably like confirmed that he wanted me there and I was going to be playing. It was against big Brian Graham. Remember him?
He's top scorer in the championship.
Is he? No way.
Yes.
He's massive, isn't he? And I'm not big. I'm just under 6 foot. And there was always a question, am I tall enough? And I beat him early that game. God, you could get me on some quotes here, Stitching. But I did. I remember that as well, yeah. But then, it all went quite quick after that.
So did you go and chap on Peter's door to say, listen, I want a shot in midfield now? Or was it Peter that came to you, Will, and said, right, listen, I see your qualities there. I want to get you into that midfield area.
I wish it was as nice as that, but no. So I played that season centre-half. I think I got Championship Team of the Year. Like, it was going well. Always a question in me and my agent said, how do I get back to England or to a higher club playing centre-half? Because we felt possibly I was good enough, but from a scout's viewing, I'm not the tallest. So you need to really be excellent if you're not massive at centre-half. You know what it's like. Bearing in mind, I've been released from Tranmere potentially because Ronnie Moore didn't think I was tall enough. So basically, it dropped me, Hoosty, for one game. So I played like 40 games on the spin, and then he dropped me. Played Tom Taiwo and someone else in the middle. I didn't even think I remembered this, but just talking to you, it's coming out. And then he put me on in midfield. So he played someone else centre-half, can't remember, Cracks and someone else. And then he brought me on in midfield, and I hadn't played there for years, but I had a really good 15 minutes, broke it up, play a little bit, played it wide. And then from then, he was like, I see you as midfielder. And then that stuck then. And then I only ever went back to centre-half or right-back if we had injuries and I needed to plug a hole. But so it was him. And it's weird because I'm doing my A-licence now. And I was talking about this the other day, that being versatile is really good, but you got to be careful as a young player that you become like, you can play there, you can play there, you can play there, but he's not good enough to play every week there. You know, you might get on the pitch from the bench, but I wanted to nail down where my career was going to be, and Hoosty was the one who did that, I suppose.
He would have saw you in training as well, doing the long throws, doing the shooting from 35, 40 yards as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah, probably. And that's why, like, I probably was never going to be a centre-half, I guess. I don't know. I'm quite a versatile player, but I would be shooting, like you say, not many centre-halves would be shooting in the five-a-side. They'd be like, whereas I would obviously do that. And then... Yeah, he obviously saw maybe the fitness side of it, which was a strong part of my game, getting about the pitch. And then he was experienced, wasn't he? He knew what he was doing. He probably thought you've got more chance in midfield and can affect the game more than a centre-half.
She moved up to Falkirk. Obviously, you know, your parents are facilitating this initially. Where did you live? Did you end up staying with boys from the team in the end, or...?
No, I mean, obviously knowing Falkirk better now, I thought they had a lot more money than they did, because it was actually quite a nice flat in Stirling that the club somehow had a lease on. I think like a staff member had left and it was spare. But I did get kicked out of it with like a month of the season left because I think another staff member was taking it. So I got lucky in that sense. It was actually an all right flat by the train station. Then I went and lived with Ronnie Bateman. I went and lived with Ronnie and his wife, and they were just so nice. They treated me like a son. I'll never forget that. You know, I was on no money, and they knew it. Ronnie knew it because he was obviously
was club secretary, I think, at the time, wasn't he? Yeah, something like that.
And I think Ronnie was a massive part of the club getting back on track in the period that I was at the club, and then leaving shows the way the club went when he left, in my opinion. Yeah, and him and his wife had a little dog, Benji. I named my dog when I got one, Benji, because of that. They just had dinner on the table for me, left me to my own time as well, supported me, and I'm really grateful for them. It was only about 3 weeks I lived with them, but, you know, it's hard at like 18, 19 to live away, and then to go and live in somebody else's house as well is hard. And, yeah, they were brilliant with me. I still do text Ronnie every now and then.
One of our Burns fan that I... No, he had said that I think eventually you end up on a farm or something like that. Is that right? Was that the final gaff around Falkirk, was it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'd love to say I lived in some penthouse, but I didn't. So I got a contract again, like I say, it definitely wasn't £5 grand a week that Google had told me. And then I got a contract then under Gary Holt, and obviously it was just like normal wages, a couple of hundred quid a week, or whatever. And just came back to the UK, came back to England, stayed with my mum and dad, and then obviously when season started, I needed a place to go and live.
Yeah.
So I went and had a look, and through Ronnie, it was Dougie Hill, his name is, he's quite well known, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he had a farm, or like an ex-milking farm, that had a little granny annex on the side. I went and lived in there, and it was freezing cold. He won't mind me saying this. I had to top up the thing with 20 quid, and that would go all the time. But you know what? It was the best. It was such a good time because I was playing football. I was living away, you know. And I look now at young players coming through, and you wonder why they don't have the hunger. They don't have the. It's all about. I sound like a bat. So it's all about TikTok. It's all about megging someone that's better than actually playing well or winning. And just that side, I had to give me that like hunger, and I wouldn't change any of it.
Who were your big mates at the club then, Will? Who was it you palled about with?
So I had none at this point. Didn't get on with anyone, really. I think I was treated not very well, if I'm honest. And I've spoke to Sibs and that about this in the past. When I first came in, maybe I rubbed people up the wrong way, but I'd come in at, like I said to you, like not getting paid, trying to earn a living, like really probably, anyway, doesn't matter. But Sibs, obviously, you all know him. Sibs, he lived in the farm, obviously his family farm. You'll all know this because everyone knows it. And he just drove past where he was living and seeing me or something, and he popped in. And from then on, he was like a younger brother to me. He's a couple of years younger. And obviously he was like Falkirk legend already, Ronnie, at that age. And me and him, we still speak. It's such a shame though with football because we're always busy at the same time. So you never can really like spend time. I've only seen Sibs like once or twice since I left Falkirk. And we were genuinely best mates for 3 years. He came and used to have dinner with me and my now wife. You know, he'd come to mine all the time. We'd look after him because he was a big kid, like didn't know how to do anything. So it was him and loads of the boys that I got on with, but he was the one that was closest to in the time at the club.
Sibs has been back a couple of times this season because Falkirk's obviously played Dundee United a couple of times in the cups, and he got a, as you would expect, he got a good reception. There was never going to be any animosity towards Sibbald. In fact, one of the young lads had scored for Dundee United in the first game we played them, and then the young lad was running over at the Falkirk crowd. But the young lads behind the team, behind the goals, the young team, he was giving it that. Sibs went over, smacked him in the back of the head for taunting the Falkirk fans. So he still thinks of us.
That's good. Nah, Sibs is a great lad, and listen, I think you can't blame Sibs for ever leaving the club. The club went downhill. No. To be honest, and that, you know, I'm from the outside, but if we'd have got promoted that year, I know Sibs would have wanted to stay at the club, and he loves Falkirk. And it's like me. If he said to me, "Oh, you can't leave," like, you know, at some point you have to go on to play for another club. And had Falkirk had progressed at that point, he might still be there. Such a talented footballer as well. Still probably never reached the level I think he should have done. But he's doing really well, I think, this year at Dundee United. I've heard a lot of good things. So, yeah, it's really good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, for most part of your career, then, well, like you say, you played under Peter Houston. What was he like as a coach?
He was good. Houston was, like, old school, but not in a bad way, in a good way. Like, we'd go mad. Probably the worst bollockings I've had were off Houston, but then he wasn't a bully with it. It's hard to explain, but I thought he was really good. You know, he'd speak to you, ask how life is. You know, he wasn't one of them managers, like I say, previous manager, who wouldn't even look at you in the corridor. You know, he'd speak to you. But you had that manager-player relationship, but he still had a bit of banter with the lads. You could go in his office. So he was really good. And I think he, after Gary Holt leaving, steadied it really well. And that was probably the most successful time the club had had in the recent history under him. And I don't know if he ever go and manage anywhere. I don't think he went and managed anywhere after that.
He does a lot of like coaching and analysis, scouting and stuff like that now. So, but yeah, you're right though. That is exactly how the fans saw him. So it's brilliant that you've kind of confirmed that as well. It's a proper Falkirk legend as well.
Yeah, and he was Falkirk through and through. I remember when he first came in, he explained his like relationship with the fans and the club and why he'd come, because I think at the time it was probably seen as a downward step maybe from where he'd been, or it was a, you know, because we were in the Championship, I think it was a bit of a coup for the club to get him.
Yeah.
He explained why he was here, and it was because he wanted to help the club, and we all bought into that, and that dressing room bought into that, and then the relationship we had as a dressing room with the fans was probably the best I've had in my career. With the local fans, because a lot of us lived in the area, and you just felt like everyone wanted the best for you, and we gave everything we could on the pitch, and it worked hand in hand.
Absolutely. You mentioned it was obviously a really successful period, Will, and it definitely was. It's like, obviously, it's not been great until this season. It's probably since you left. I don't want to say it was your fault or you've jinxed us or anything, but well, obviously, that was such a successful period. What was the best like match or goal that you played in at Falkirk?
It's funny you say that, because just quickly, when I say to people about Falkirk, I always have to say that like, since I left. And then when I say that, I think it sounds like I mean, since I left, obviously, I don't mean that. It was just so coincided.
Well, it's a bit of a coincidence.
No. Because to be fair, the year after I left, I think the playoffs again, it was just the club had changed that year, didn't they? With, I think, who was the manager coming?
Paul Hartley.
Paul Hartley, that was it. Yeah. But anyway,
let's move on.
some unbelievable games, I think. For me, probably when we beat Rangers 2-1, there was more important games, but that one, we were never, you know, now look at Rangers and Falkirk, the gap, but there was a big gap then. There was a game we beat them 3-2. That one was brilliant. But a personal view, we'd been on our Christmas party, and then we'd had you'll remember when I tell you, but we'd been on a Christmas party, really good bonding. All the boys had been to Dublin, I think. And basically, ball fell to the middle of the pitch. Won like a 50-50. I think it was a Tavernier at the time. So kind of smashed him, got up, ran, which I never did. Ran with the ball. And I got fouled for the penalty and barely scored the penalty. And he'd done a celebration, which was part of our Christmas do. And then I scored the winner, fell out to the edge, and I scored the winner. Please tell me I'm getting the game right.
No, I think you're right. Was this the one where there was a bit of controversy about whether you were in the box or out the box?
This is definitely the game where Will was nowhere near. It was like a mile inside the box. Brilliant.
Classic Willie Collum, I think. But yeah, did he give a penalty again? Do you remember? Because I think he must have cottoned. I think the same.
It was the last minute.
And Danny Rogers tipped it on the post.
He saved it. Yeah, he saved it.
So brilliant. That one, because that was one I remember, because that was selfish point of view, because I played a big part in it, scored the goal, and then Danny, who was really close with me, him and Sibs hung around a lot, saved the penalty. We were all been on the do, so we were all like together. But obviously, the Hibs won in the playoffs with Bob McHugh. I look back, and when I came to Rotherham after that, we were really poor at coming back from losing positions the first season. It changed. I remember, like, I couldn't get my head around how the players would give up, because that year that we beat Hibs in the playoffs and that, we'd come back so many times.
Last minute goals.
And the atmosphere, you know, what does Falkirk hold? 6,000?
Yeah, 6,000-7,000, yep.
Yeah, so like, every week though, it was coming. It was like full, especially obviously the home end and the south stand, they called it.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere, like the amount of late goals going in, and still now sometimes when it pops up, the goals we scored, the roar of the crowd. It must be where the speaker is as well, but it's so good. It gets me, like you can see, you know, I loved it, and we did it that many times that we never felt we were beat. We just thought like we'll come back in this game.
I mean, Bob McHugh goal, especially against Hibswell, it was just, certainly in the stands, the atmosphere and just the steam, like, just because of what you say, it was the last minute. And I just remember turning to Ross at the time going, right, I think you took the throw in, didn't you?
Yeah, he did.
And then Big Lee got ahead on, and then Bob was just there, as Bob McHugh always seemed to do, just was there to put it in the back of the net. It was just, I don't know what it was like on the pitch, but certainly in the stands, it was unbelievable.
Oh, it was class. I think I was about 2 yards on the pitch, by the way, if you watch it back, because Alex Cubs actually sign it rather than, but yeah, I was way on the pitch. Big Lee flicked it on, which he was so good at. And then Bob, like you say, great lad, but never really played that much. And then would just come on and score the winner. And then, it was that atmosphere when that, because it was game over, it was late on as well.
You knew it was done then, didn't we? Yeah.
And let's be honest, like, I know now, being a lot more senior player and I've been around a lot more, I know the wages at Hibs and the wages at Falkirk and the fans. Like, we shouldn't have been touching them, really.
Yeah.
You know, we were really punching and pushing at the top of our capabilities for a club the size of Hibs, and, you know, they still had a decent budget. They still had players that had played in the Premier League. We had none. We were all a lot of young players who just kind of worked up. And so, yeah, that togetherness in that team was brilliant, and in the staff as well. But yeah, that goal was brilliant. But you're probably going to lead to Kilmarnock, which was tough.
Well, I know.
It
was very tough. I mean, it was obviously you scored the goal in the first leg. And then it just seemed that when we went to that second one, you guys were out on your arse. I mean, it just seemed like your tank was completely empty after all those Hibs playoff games, and then getting in, it just seemed, I don't know what was, if it was tactics or what was going, but you boys just seemed like the tank was empty to a point.
Yeah, it wasn't tactics, I wouldn't say. We did blow up a bit. I was, like you said, scored that goal, and I remember my mate came up for the game, which they didn't often because my mates were my age. They were in uni, obviously no money, similar situations, but my mate and his little brother came up to watch it, and remember trying to be really calm after the game that scored the winner in, because nothing was done yet.
No.
It's a good start, you know, no denying that. And then I was really, really angry after the Kilmarnock game. I was gutted after the Inverness game, because that was heartbreaking. We should have won that, in my opinion.
And absolutely.
It was a mistake. I know Jamie came in after, and I think, you know, he was one of our most experienced players, and it was a mistake for the goal, but it was just heartbreaking. But the Kilmarnock one, I was just furious, and I think a few of us were, but I feel like we didn't really ever get going. Mistakes for the goals, and I don't know if the occasion got the better of us, but also, like you say, it's so rigged against them teams trying to go up. It's so hard to win it, all those games, and then go again to a Kilmarnock team who were Premier League fresh. They've only played one game.
Mm.
I think we did just run out of steam and ran out of, like, that fight that we'd had, which is such a shame, because I'm, you know, so desperate to help get the club to the Premier League. But yeah, it wasn't to be.
That playoff, it does feel rigged, and it's always felt that way, because it was like it's always been seen as a bit of a close shot, Will, and I think you're right that it was probably just one game too many for us with the schedule that we'd had. And then, yeah, as you said, it was probably a combination of things on the day. But I just remember, like, John and I, we were behind that goal that day. We're 4,500 Falkirk fans, and you thought, oh, we're almost there. We're almost there. And then, as you say, an early goal, I think it was for Kelly, just sort of knocked the stuffing out of us, didn't it?
Yeah, I think that goal, I don't know, I'd guess about 15 minutes in. It's one game I've never, like, looked back on.
No.
It was tough to take. I think, I remember the atmosphere. I don't remember that much of the game, that one, but the atmosphere doing the shooting before the game was unbelievable. It was a warm day, and, like, the fans were in there thinking, and I felt the same. I think that's why I was so angry, because maybe in myself, I felt like we were going to go and do it, and I had full belief. And then to feel like we never give it a shot. We did, obviously, don't get me wrong, but, like, you know, when you get beat, was it 4-0?
4-0.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's really knocking the stuffing off you. But it was great the playoffs came in, because the playoffs came in the year I came up. There was no playoffs. So we wouldn't have had all those great games that we had, because, you know, we had playoffs the year before as well. But the year before that, sorry. So that was great. But, yeah, they need to have a think, I think, about that game. That game, the last one, needs to be one game.
One final. Yeah, exactly.
Because two legs over a Premier League team when you've won four games ready to get there is a bit much.
Absolutely. You talked about shooting there, just to talk about the shooting drills, Will. Was the goal against Rangers your best in a Falkirk jersey, or what was your best goal, do you reckon?
I don't know. I mean,
You didn't score many tap-ins, well, that's all I'll say.
No, do you know, I never have. My brother always says this, like, if I could get some tap-ins as well, I'd have a lot more goals, because I honestly think like 80%, 90% of my goals come up outside the box. But yeah, I think the first one I scored, I was at home and we won like 4-0 or something. That's when I did the backflip. It wasn't the first goal, but it's first like long range. Kind of just set this thing of I'm just going to shoot from outside the box. So I always knew I could shoot, but I wasn't like a specialist at it. It just kind of came as time went on. Really hard to say the best goal, because what's the most important goal? The best one, one of the best ones probably at Ibrox. It came out to me on like the half volley and it was the equaliser, but we got beat. So then it just knocks the stuffing out.
I remember that one. You ran the length of the pitch to come and celebrate with us on the corner.
I got to about the halfway line, because obviously at Ibrox you only get about 30 fans in the corner, don't you?
Yeah.
And, I thought I'd make it over to them, and then I was like, I can't run much further. So yeah, I find it hard to pick a goal out. Really, I mean, the winner at home was nice. It was a good goal against St Mirren where Sibs played it back to me. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. I don't have a standout one, because some of them were really important goals. Some of them were like better because they were nicer finishes, but that was where the start of, like, you know, the long range kind of goals came for me, which was nice.
see from the fans' perspective, well, it was a build up of stuff. It was the you getting the ball, and then I don't know if you felt it in the stands and the pitch, but the crowd just go, oh, like, what are you going to do from 40 yards out? And then you'd score, and then the celebration then came in. So talk us through the celebration. Where did that come from?
Yeah, that was a bit of a mad one, the celebration, because just to touch on what you said, Dan, it was funny because, like, I ain't got the best first touch, I know that. So I'd take a touch and then I'd take another one. But nearly always, if you watch my goals, I've taken one and then I've taken one more just to set it. And then you would get that feeling. Definitely at Falkirk by the end was like, go on, hit it.
Go on, hit it.
But yeah, that obviously gives you confidence, helps. And as they come, they tend to follow a bit better. You know, at the moment, I'm in an absolute dry spell. But yeah, so just used to be able to do it as a kid, like, taught myself it. My mum used to always panic, so I'd break my neck because I wasn't like taught it. I just used to do a backflip and then tried to do the wrap. And then it was at Tranmere. I scored a goal against Man City in like a random friendly game when I was like 16. And the boys had been somehow knew I could do it. And it was the winner. It was like a header. And I did it, which is mad because it was just a kid's game. But then I thought, I'll do that if I ever score a really important goal or a good goal. And then I think I scored one or two maybe the first season, but they were like tap-ins. And then obviously scored the long range I was on about, which I'm annoyed I can't remember who it was against, but might have been.
I've got Livingston in my head, but I don't know if that's if that's right. I had Livingston in my head. I don't know if it was Livingston, maybe Livy at home.
I'll find it because you go back on your Instagram from years ago, and I used to put my goals on my private Instagram. Yeah, so that goal was a good goal. So I just ran off and thought, I'm going to do it. And then, I sound like a bloody all over myself here. But then, obviously, the goals I scored tended to be either important goals or good goals. So I just kind of kept doing it. And then by the time you're doing it, then you think, do you know what? If I score a scrappy goal, I might do it. And I was always lucky that, like I say, they were either an equaliser or taking the lead. They were very rarely like 4-0 down. I've done it once. And I always get stick for it. At Goodison away, we played them, and I was at Rotherham against Everton, and we were 2-0 down, and I scored the header, and I did the backflip, and I've never lived it down since. It was because I had loads of friends obviously it's local to me, and as I was running back, the fans were there, and I just did it and carried on running. But yeah.
But was he not like your model? Well, was he not like, don't do that, son. You'll end up doing yourself an injury.
Yeah. But he just basically said, if you injure yourself doing that, you get ready. I was lucky that most managers, well, all of them, kind of allowed me to. Because I think if a manager said, you can't do that, it'd have been like, come on, like, you know. But yeah, never got injured, luckily. Sorry, I'm just trying to find this goal. I know it's here somewhere.
While you're searching for that, well, obviously a big thing that you're known for locally, and I know it's the same wherever you've went as well, is the sort of community side. Is that something that you've always been interested in, or was there a trigger
So yeah, it started at Falkirk, some of it with Kieran, who was the head of commercial. I used to do loads of just commercial stuff because I lived in the area, and he'd say, "We come and, you know, like, you know, it's like pose in front of this car or whatever, open a thing." Yeah. And then that led into like doing a bit more in like the schools and community. And then I think just because I was local, and I think because of my journey maybe, and I felt like I wanted to like connect with the fan base and connect with the local people. And I don't know, maybe it's just in my personality. Like my mum, like I say, was here. She volunteered a lot when I was growing up, so it's kind of just in me a little bit. And then it really accelerated when I was at Rotherham. Won't go into loads of detail about that, but I am the reason my mum's here is I'm going to the House of Parliament tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And I've won, or it might be the House of Commons. I've won a community award for the championship.
Amazing.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
It's really nice. So, yeah, I think it's important that as a player, as a footballer, the amount we get and receive in positive ways, don't get me wrong, there's loads of negative, but as long the stuff we get, like with kids, you know, I remember at Falkirk when it was going great and getting kids come up and looking at me. And you know, at the time, like I say, I was earning no money. I was just loving my football, and these kids were asking me like what car I drove, and I had a Fiesta. But it was like they looked up to you, and I remember looking up to like Newcastle players growing up.
Yeah.
And then I just felt like, do you know what? How hard is it to sign an autograph? How hard is it to spend a bit of time, send a video, you know, send a shirt if you can, stuff like that. And I think that just kind of like snowballed as my career's gone on, and obviously getting a bit more mature and a bit older, I feel it's really important to give back, because we do receive a lot from the local area, and we can have a big impact, rightly or wrongly.
I do like the sound of Will Vokes MBE. I think that has a really nice ring to it, you know.
No, I'm not even responding to that.
You certainly will get one in Falkirk, the Falkirk area. You're knighted up here next time you come, Will. Listen, I just want to do some quick fire teammates question before we get on to the next one. So you're from your time at Falkirk, who's the biggest wind up merchant?
Wind up merchant. I'm gonna go with Cracks, Dave McCracken. He wasn't necessarily a wind up merchant, but he was a joker. I loved Cracks. He was my best probably one of the best captains I still have had. He was brilliant. He was experienced, but part of the lads as well.
Yeah,
brilliant. Who's the hardest player that you played alongside at Falkirk? Like toughest tackler, just hard man in the dressing room type thing.
Tough tackler. Do you know who surprisingly used to smash people was Kerzo. He could tackle, you know, in training and that, and he didn't take any shit, Kerzo. But obviously he was a really good footballer as well. But probably Aaron Muirhead in the time, he was probably like the one who were dead through the back.
Oh, of yeah.
Kick people. Yeah, so probably one of them too. I'll say myself, hard man. But
worst trainer, Will, who didn't give a job?
Oh, God. Worst trainer. I mean, there was a few, but obviously they didn't end up playing because Houston wouldn't stand for
wouldn't
that.
Play them.
Birdie. He would train hard, but the difference in him on a match day, you could just turn it on.
Yeah.
So to say, because on a match day, like he was like an energizer bunny. He just seemed to run about.
So that's hard. The worst trainer, you obviously go for someone lazy, but to be honest, we didn't have that in the 11. That was players that I wouldn't want to mention, not in a bad way, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like the difference from like training and then playing, Birdie would turn it on a match day, and he accelerated his like career probably in that time. Yeah,
he's managing over in Australia, I think, now.
I knew he was in Australia. I spoke to him years ago, but I didn't know if he was
there. Yeah, I think he's a manager now, randomly. Who's the teacher's pet? Who's the first to kind of chap on the gaffer's door and say, come on, gaffer, play me?
Luke Leahy, he was
Luke Leahy, was he?
he would have a joke, but he was always in with the manager. I'd say probably him.
What about late now? Best is before you were all married, right? Okay, who was the ladies' man?
Sibs, well done.
Sibs, yeah.
Yeah, he was he was like King of Falkirk, wasn't he? You go out with
he
him.
Was.
like batting them off. Because obviously you grow up, you knew everybody as well around. Probably Sibs.
What about worst dressed in the dressing room? Well, who came in with the crappy gear?
David Weatherstone, who's only there for a short period of time, but he used to dress the worst I've ever seen. He was looked homeless half the time.
And finally, who got never got the round in well?
Tom Tyrell.
Tom,
oh,
Tom
was he?
Yeah, Tom Tyrell. Tight, would avoid the round.
So, well, just last few questions, if we may. You are regarded as like a huge Navy Boy favourite. You still are, and as John said, like young team, old team, still talk about you from your time. How does that actually make you feel as somebody who's obviously been a part of the club and then been away for a bit of time as well?
So honestly, it makes me quite emotional. It's really nice to hear because obviously I came off Twitter years ago. And I had a really good relationship with Falkirk fans on Twitter when Twitter was a positive place to be. And a lot of, like, I could stay in touch with people, but also post some stuff now and then about Falkirk because, like, you know, whatever had happened, won a game or whatever.
Yeah.
And that obviously all came away and, like, raffling a few shirts off. You'd get a bit of communication and, you know, that was nice. So that's been, like, 5-6 years I've been off Twitter now, so I've no idea what people think of me in Falkirk now. And to hear that, honestly, it means the world to me because I couldn't mean this more genuinely. Falkirk saved my career, gave me the opportunity to have the career I've had, to play international football. I owe everything to Falkirk, and I mean that. And you hear people say that, and I'm an honest person when I do these interviews. I'm not a footballer that just speaks cliches and says things people want to hear. But honestly, I do owe everything because if they'd have not taking that opportunity on me, I believe that finding a route to where I got to, I'd have had to, you got very lucky to find another route. And I hope that in the time, you know, I repaid that faith and, you know, it worked out great for both parties in the end. So it's really nice. And I have, like I say, such a love for the club and been quite sad to see, you know, the last few years of how it's gone, but now it looks like back on the way up and the fan base is back in the grounds again. And I do follow as much as I can, like I say, without being on social media, which is a shame, but it's a toxic place.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. I mean, you just mentioned at the start as well, that you're doing your A licence at the moment. Is coaching and management, I mean, you're 30, I mean, you've still got a good few years in the tank in terms of your playing career, but is coaching and management the kind of next step for you?
I think it is, yeah. I didn't think so for a few years because football's all-consuming and, you know, you have kids and family life and you think, do I want to be, you know, consumed by football for the rest of your life? Because that's what you do if you go into management. You work longer hours and you travel just as much and you commit to the negatives of being a footballer, which I won't cry me a river about, but there are them. And then just doing my coaching journey, I found I've really enjoyed it. A lot more than I thought I would have done. And I think you learn a lot over the years of what to do, what maybe not to do, just as much. And I think it is something I want to go into to answer your question, is management. You know, it's about getting the best out of your players. And I think that's something that I could potentially do when I finish.
Amazing. And obviously this season, it's currently, obviously, Wednesday are in a bit of a tough place just now. What's the feeling in the camp for this season?
Yeah, well, I don't know how much you've seen of the year, but we've had a crazy season, really. After being promoted, we didn't win a game for 10 games. We sacked the manager and then got a new manager in who, you talk about my coaching journey, he is like elite level. If you think we're elite, we're not. That's elite level management. As his tactical knowledge of the game is frightening, and that's helped me so much on my short coaching journey, just to pick ideas off what he's doing.
The league table's so tight as well, isn't it? The championship table's so tight down there.
Yeah, so we've turned it round. If you look at since he's came in, we've done brilliantly. But we've tightened it really back up and we've got 8 cup finals now, as cliche as that is, but we genuinely have got 8 games to try and stay up, and I think that'll be a bigger achievement than going up last year. So it's looking, you know, hopefully in a positive way considering where we come from. But we've essentially just got to win more games than the people above us and keep fighting till the end, which I'm sure
That's it.
we do. Fancy, well, you might come back as the manager, Will, but you know, see if you're winding your career and just think, I just quite fancy a bit of a laugh. Do you fancy coming back up to the stadium just for a couple, you know, we're not saying maybe like a 6 month deal or something. Well, just come back up for a laugh. Come on.
Yeah, if they can sort me that flat in Stirling again.
We'll pay you this time. We'll pay you this time, honestly.
Yeah, that's what I got told the first time. No, listen, that would be full circle, wouldn't it? Like, but yeah, I still follow the club, and the manager's doing amazing. I think record setting and unbelievable stuff this year. I just, like I say, see little things, and the positive things I see from the club is like, given how many extensions of players' contracts have been signed, it's not a short-term live thing. And for me, players who've earned that and done that for you deserve that, and to have a go again at the level above. And hopefully you can consolidate or even do back-to-back and go again, because when I was there, that's where the club should have been, at the Premier League. And I look at the clubs in the Premier League who've survived in that time, Livingston, for example. You know, for me, Falkirk should be in that league.
There. So just to check though, verbally, once we're in the Premier League, you're coming back. That's confirmed, is it?
It's basically signed already.
Right, perfect.
That's what I heard. Just make sure the pay is backdated from the first time round as well. Yeah, that's sorry, Will. Right. Start flat in Stirling, backdated pay, jobs are good then.
We need Sibs back as well, though. So
we need Sibs back as well, and it'll all be good. We'll get the band back together. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck for the rest of the season, and hopefully we'll see you up here for a game at some point. And like I say, maybe in the dugout or back on the pitch.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. No, thanks for the chat, guys, and it's nice to look back, because I don't do it very often. Like I say, don't speak to many people anymore from those times, and it's surprising my memories will be so much that I remember. And
oh, you've done well.
It's all happy memories and, you know, great times. So yeah, it'd be lovely to come back at some point. It's hard with football, but I would love to. There'll be no playoff final for you this year, so I won't be at that, because you've done it.
Brilliant. Well, Volks, thank you so much for coming on Falkirk Daft. That's it for this week's edition of Falkirk Daft. Meets Will Volks, everyone.